rode east along the road of buffalo bones.
Chapter 55.
Monkey John hated it that she wouldn't talk. "By God, I'll cut your tongue out if you ain't gonna use it," he said once. And he knocked her down and sat on her, his big knife an inch from her face, until Dogface threatened to shoot him if he didn't let her be. Lorena expected him to do it. He was the worst man she had ever known, worse even than Irmoki and the Kiowas, though they were bad enough. She shut her eyes, expecting to feel the knife, but Dogface cocked his pistol, and Monkey John didn't cut her. He continued to sit on her chest, though, arguing with Dogface about her silence. "What do you care if she talks?" Dogface said. "I wouldn't talk to you either, you goddamn old runt." "She can talk, goddamn her," Monkey John said. "Duck said she talked to him." "It's her business if she don't want to talk," Dogface insisted. He was a thin scarecrow of a man, but he had crazy eyes, and Monkey John never pushed him too far. "By God, we bought her," Monkey John said. "Give all them hides for her. She ought to do what we say." "You get your damn money's worth," Dogface said. "Most of them hides was mine anyway. You old runt," he added. Monkey John was old and short. His hair was a dirty white, and he was under 5 feet. But that didn't keep him from being mean. Twice he had grabbed sticks out of the fire and beat her with them. There was nothing she could do but curl up as tight as she could. Her back and legs were soon burned and bruised, and she knew Monkey John would do worse than that if he ever got her alone long enough. But Dogface owned half of her, and he stuck close to be sure his investment didn't get too damaged. Though she had seen Dogface and Monkey John give Blue Duck the skins in trade for her, it seemed they weren't full owners, for whenever the Kiowa showed up, every 2 or 3 days, they drug her off to their camp for their share, and the 2 white men didn't try and stop them. There was no love lost between the white men and the Kiowas, but both sides were too afraid of Blue Duck to get into it with one another. Blue Duck was the only man of the bunch who seemed to take no interest in her. He had stolen her to sell, and he had sold her. It was clear that he didn't care what they did to her. When he was in camp, he spent his time cleaning his gun or smoking, and seldom even looked her way. Monkey John was bad, but Blue Duck still scared her more. His cold, empty eyes frightened her more than Monkey John's anger or Dogface's craziness. Blue Duck had scared the talk completely out of her. She had never been much for talk, but her silence in the camp was different from her old silence. In Lonesome Dove, she had often hidden her words, but she could find them if she needed them. She had brought them out quick enough when Jake came along. Now speech had left her. Fear took its place. The 2 white men talked constantly of killing. Blue Duck didn't talk about it, but she knew he could do it whenever it pleased him. She didn't expect to live to the end of any day. Only the fact that the men weren't tired of her yet kept her alive. When they did tire, they would kill her. She thought about how it would happen, but couldn't picture it in her mind. She only hoped it wasn't Blue Duck that finally did it. She was so dirty and stank so that it seemed strange the men would even want to use her. But of course they were even dirtier and stank worse. They camped not far from a creek, but none of the men ever washed. Monkey John told her several times what he would do to her if she tried to run away. Terrible things, on the order of what Blue Duck had threatened on the morning after he had kidnapped her, only worse if possible. He said he would sew her up with rawhide threads so tight she couldn't make water, and then would watch her till she burst. Lorena tried to shut her mind when he talked like that. She knew the trick of not talking, and was learning not to hear. At night she wondered sometimes if she could just learn to die. She wanted to, and imagined how angry they would be if they woke up one morning and she was dead so they could get no more from her. But she couldn't learn that trick. She thought of being dead, but she didn't die. And she didn't try to escape either. She didn't know where she was, for the plain stretched around, empty and bare, as far as she could see. They had horses, and they would catch her and do something to her, or else give her to the Kiowas. Monkey John threatened that, too, describing what the Kiowas would do if they got a chance. At night, that was mostly what the men talked about, what the Indians did to people they caught. She believed it. Often with the Kiowas, she felt a deep fright come over. They did what they wanted with her, but it wasn't enough. She could see them looking at her after they finished, and the looks made her more scared even than the things Monkey John threatened. The Kiowas just looked. But there was something in their looks that made her wish she could be dead and not have to think about it. Blue Duck came and went. Some days he would be there at the camp, sharpening his knife. Other days he would ride off. Sometimes the Kiowas went with him. Other days they sat around their camp doing nothing. Monkey John swore at them, but the Kiowas didn't listen. They laughed at the old man and gave him looks of the sort they gave Lorena. It wasn't only women that they could do things to. One day the Kiowas found a crippled cow, left by some herd. The cow had split a hoof and could barely hobble along on three legs. The Kiowas poked it with their lances and got it in sight of camp. Then one of them hit it in the head with an axe, and the cow fell dead. The Kiowas split open the cow's stomach and began to pull out her guts. They sliced off strips of the white guts and squeezed out what was in them, eating it greedily. "That's what he said he'd do to me," Lorena thought. "Pull out my guts like that cow." "Look at them darn gut-eaters," Dogface said. "I'd be darned if I'd eat guts raw." "You might if you was hungry," Monkey John said. "They ain't hungry. They got the whole cow," Dogface pointed out. If there was hope for her, Lorena knew it lay with Dogface. He was rough and crazy, but he wasn't hard like the old man. He might cuff her if she disappointed him, but he didn't beat her with hot sticks or kick her stomach like the old man did. At times she caught Dogface looking at her in a friendly way. He was getting so he didn't like Monkey John to hurt her or even touch her. He was cautious about what he said, for the old man would flare up in an instant, but when Monkey John bothered her, Dogface got restless and would often take his gun and leave the camp. Monkey John didn't care. He played with her roughly, whether anyone was in camp or not. One night, Blue Duck rode in from one of his mysterious trips with some whiskey, which he dispensed freely, both to the two white men and to the Kiowas. Blue Duck drank with them, but not much, whereas in an hour Monkey John, Dogface, and the Kiowas were very drunk. It was a hot night, but they built a big campfire and sat around it, passing the bottle from hand to hand. Lorena began to feel frightened. Blue Duck had not so much as looked at her, but she felt something was about to happen. He had several bottles of whiskey, and as soon as the men finished one, he handed them another. Monkey John was particularly sloppy when he drank. The whiskey ran out of the corners of his mouth and into his dirty beard. Once he stood up and made water without even turning his back. "You could go off a ways," Dogface said. "I don't want to sit in your piss." The old man continued to make water, most of it hitting the campfire and making a spitting sound. But some splattered on the ground near where Dogface sat. "I could, but I ain't about to," the old man said. "Scoot back if you're afraid of a little piss." Blue Duck spread a blanket near the fire and began to roll dice on it. The Kiowas immediately got excited. Ermoki grabbed the dice and rolled them several times. Each of the Kiowas had a try, but Monkey John scoffed at their efforts. "Them gut-eaters can't throw dice," he said. "You better be quiet," Blue Duck said. "Ermoki wouldn't mind frying your liver." "He tries it and I'll blow a hole through him you could catch rainwater through," Monkey John said. "Let's gamble. I ain't had a game in a while." "Gamble for what?" Dogface asked. "All I got is my gun, and I'd be in pretty shape without that, or my horses." "Put up your horses, then," Blue Duck said. "You might win." Dogface shook his head. "I don't know much," Dogface said, "but I know better than to bet my darn horses. There ain't nowhere to walk to from this Canadian that a man can get to on foot." Yet an hour later, he lost his horses to Blue Duck. Monkey John lost his on the first roll. Before long, Blue Duck had won all the horses, though many of the Indians were so drunk they hardly seemed to know what was happening. Blue Duck had a heavy, square face. He kept shaking the dice in his big hand. Sometimes he would play with a strand of his shaggy hair, as a girl would. Sometimes Lorena thought maybe she could grab a gun and shoot him. The men left their rifles laying around. But the gun hadn't worked when she tried to shoot Tinkersley, and if she tried to shoot Blue Duck and it didn't kill him, she would be in for it. She might be in for it anyway, though it seemed to her the men were scared of him, too. Even Monkey John was cautious when Blue Duck was around. They might be glad to see him dead. She didn't try it. It was because she was so frightened of him that she wanted to, yet the same fright kept her from it.
"Well, now I've won the livestock," Blue Duck said. "Or most of it."
"Most of it? Hell, you've won it all," Monkey John said. "We're stuck on this goddamn river."
"I ain't won the girl," Blue Duck said.
"A woman ain't livestock," Dogface said.
"This one is. I bought and sold better animals than her many times."
"Well, she's ours," Monkey John said.
"She's just half yours," Blue Duck reminded him. "Her Moki and his boys on a half interest."
"We was aiming to buy them out," Dogface said. Blue Duck laughed his heavy laugh.
"By the time you raise the money, there won't be much left to buy," he said. "You'd do better to buy a goat."
"Don't want no goddamn goat," Dogface said. He was nervous about the turn the conversation was taking.
"Let's gamble some more," Blue Duck said, shaking the dice at Ermoki. "Bet me your half interest in the woman. If you win, I'll let you have your horses back."
Ermoki shook his head, looking at Lorena briefly across the campfire.
"No," he said. "We want the woman." "Come on, let's gamble," Blue Duck said, a threatening tone in his voice.
All the Kiowas looked at him. The two white men kept quiet. The Kiowas began to argue among themselves. Lorena didn't understand their gabble, but it was clear some wanted to gamble and some didn't. Some wanted their horses back. Ermoki finally changed his mind, though he kept looking across the fire at her. It was as if he wanted her to know he had his plans for her, however the game turned out. All the Kiowas finally agreed to gamble except one, the youngest. He didn't want it. He was skinny and very young-looking, no more than 16, but he was more interested in her than the rest. Sometimes in the Kiowa camp, he had two turns, or even three. The older men laughed at his appetite and tried to distract him when he covered her, but he ignored them. Now he balked. He didn't look up, just kept his eyes down and shook his head. The Kiowas yelled at him, but he didn't respond. He just kept shaking his head. He didn't want to risk his interest in her.
"That damn chigger's holding up the game," Blue Duck said to Ermoki.
He stood up and walked a few steps into the darkness. In a minute they heard him making water. The Kiowas were still drinking whiskey. Now Ermoki was in the mood to gamble. He reached over and shook the young man, trying to get him to agree, but the young man looked sullenly at the ground. Suddenly there was a shot, startling them all, and the young man flopped backwards. Blue Duck stepped back into the firelight, a rifle in his hands. The Indians were speechless. Blue Duck sat down, the rifle across his lap, and rattled the dice again. The young Indian's feet were still in the light, but the feet didn't move.
"By God, life's cheap up here on the goddamn Canadian," Monkey John said. "Cheap. Then it might get cheaper," Blue Duck said.
Then the gambling started again. The dead boy was ignored. In a few minutes, Blue Duck had won her back, not only what the Indians owned, but what the white men owned, too. Dogface didn't want to play, but he also didn't want to die. He played and lost, and so did Monkey John.
"I think you're a goddamn cheat," Monkey John said, drunk enough to be reckless. "I think you cheated me out of our horses, and now you've cheated us out of this woman."
I don't want the woman, Blue Duck said. You men can have her back as a gift, and your horses, too, provided you do me one favor. I'll bet it's a hell of a big favor, Dogface said. What do you want us to do, attack a fort? Blue Duck chuckled. There's an old man following me, he said. He went west, but he'll be coming along one of these days. I want you to kill him. You hear that, Imoki? He added. You can have your horses back, and the woman, too. Just kill that old man. I hear he's coming down the river. I'd like to know who you hear it from, Monkey John asked. He's been following me ever since I stole the woman, Blue Duck said. He ain't no tracker, though. He went off across the Quetaqua, but now he's figured it out, and he'll be coming. By God, he must want her bad to come all this way, Monkey John said. Kill him tomorrow, Blue Duck said, looking at Irmoki. Take some of the horses and go find some help. Irmoki was drunk and angry. We do it, he said. Then we take the woman. The hell you will, Dogface said. We're in on this, and she's half ours. You ain't taking her nowhere.
You shut up or I'll kill you like that chigger, Blue Duck said. You get some help, he said again, looking at Irmoki. I doubt you five can kill that old man.
Hell, what is he, Monkey John said. Five against one's nice odds.
These five can't shoot, Blue Duck said. They can whoop and holler, but they can't shoot. That old man can.
That makes a difference, Dogface agreed. I can shoot. If he gets past Irmoki, I'll finish him.
Somebody better settle him, Blue Duck said. Otherwise, you'll all be dead.
The Kiowas stood up and drugged the dead boy away. Lorena heard them arguing in the darkness. Blue Duck sat where he was, his rifle across his lap. He seemed half asleep. Monkey John got up and came over to her.
Who is this old man? He asked. You got a husband?
Lorena stayed in her silence. It infuriated Monkey John. He grabbed her by the hair and cuffed her, knocking her over. Then he grabbed a stick of wood and was about to beat her with it when Dogface intervened.
"Put it down," he said. "You beat her enough." "Let her answer me, then," Monkey John said. "She can talk. Doc says so."
Dogface picked up his rifle. Monkey John still had the stick.
"You'd pull a gun on me over a whore," Monkey John said. I ain't gonna shoot you, but I'll break your head if you don't let her be, Dogface said.
Monkey John was too drunk to listen. He charged Dogface and swung the stick at him, but Dogface wasn't as drunk. He hit Monkey John with the barrel of his rifle. The old man went looped leg and dropped his stick. Then he dropped too, falling on the stick.
I'd have let him beat her, Blue Duck said.
I ain't you, Dogface said.
In the night, Lorena tried to sort it out in her mind. She had been hungry so much, tired so much, scared so much, that her mind didn't work well anymore. Sometimes she would try to remember something and couldn't. It was as if her mind and memory had gone and hidden somewhere until things were better. Dogface had given her an old blanket. Otherwise, she would have had to sleep on the ground in what was left of her clothes. She wrapped the blanket around her and tried to think back over the talk. It meant Gus was coming. It was Gus Blue Duck wanted the Kiowas to kill. She had almost forgotten he was following her. Life had gotten so hard. The Kiowas had been sent to kill him, so Gus might never arrive. It was hard to believe that Gus would get her out. The times when she had known him had been so different from the hard times. She didn't think she would ever get out. Blue Duck was too bad. Dogface was her only chance, and Dogface was scared of Blue Duck. Sooner or later, Blue Duck would give her to Irmoki or someone just as hard. If that was going to happen, it was better that her mind had gone to hide. In the gray dawn, she saw the Kiowas leave. Blue Duck talked to them in Indian talk and gave them some bullets to kill Gus with. He woke Dogface and shook Monkey John more or less awake.
If he gets Pastor Moki, you two kill him, he said. And then he left. Monkey John looked awful. He had a bloody lump on his head and a hangover. He had slept with his face in the dirt all night, and an ant had stung him several times, leaving one eye swollen nearly shut. He got to his feet, but he could hardly stand. "How's he think I can shoot?" he asked Dogface. "I can't see but from one eye, and it's the wrong eye." "Put some mud on it. It's just ant bites," Dogface said. He was cleaning his gun.
Chapter 56.
Augustus was a little put out with himself for doing such a poor job of tracking. He had gambled on Blue Duck heading west, when in fact he had crossed the Red and gone straight north. It was the kind of gamble Call would never take. Call would have tracked all the way, or let Dietz track. The country near the Canadian was rough and broken, and he dropped south to where the plains flattened out. He wanted to spare his horse as much as possible. He rode east all morning, a bad feeling in his heart. He had meant to catch Blue Duck within a day, but he hadn't. The renegade had out-traveled him. It would have been rough on Laurie, such traveling. He should have borrowed Call's mare, but the thought hadn't occurred to him until too late. By this time, Laurie could be dead or ruined. He had helped recover several captives from the Comanches in his rangering days, and often the recovery came too late if the captives were women. Usually their minds were gone, and they were only interested in dying, which they mostly did once they got back to the people who would let them die. He was thinking about Laurie when the Indians broke for him. Where they had hidden he didn't know, for he was in the center of a level plain. He first heard a little cutting sound, and bullets zipped into the grass, 10 yards from his horse. Later, the sound of bullets cutting grass was more distinct in his memory than the sounds of the shots. Before he really heard the shots, he had his horse in a dead run, heading south. It seemed to him that there were 10 or 12 Indians, but he was more concerned with outrunning them than getting a count. But within minutes, he knew he wasn't going to be able to outrun them. He had pushed his horse too hard, and soon was steadily losing ground. There was plenty of ground to lose, too. He had hoped for a creek or a bank or a gully, something he could get down into and make his stand. But he was on the flat prairie as far as the eye could see. He contemplated turning and trying to charge through. If he killed 3 or 4, they might get discouraged. But if there was even one man among them with any sense, they'd just shoot the horse, and there he'd be. He glimpsed something white on the prairie slightly to the east and headed for it. It turned out to be more buffalo bones, another place where a sizable herd of animals had been slaughtered. As Augustus raced through the bones, he saw a wallow, a place where many buffalo had laid down and rolled in the dirt. It was only a slight depression on the plain, not more than a foot deep, but he decided it was the best he was going to get. The Indians were barely a minute behind him. He jumped down, pulled his rifle and cartridge rolls clear of the horse, and dropped them in the buffalo wallow. Then he drew his knife, wrapped the bridle reins tightly around one hand, and jabbed the knife into the horse's neck, slashing the jugular vein. Blood poured out, and the horse leaped and plunged desperately, but Augustus held on, though sprayed with blood. When the horse fell, he managed to turn him so that the horse lay across one end of the wallow, his blood pumping out into the dust. Once the horse tried to rise, but Augustus jerked him back, and he didn't try again. It was a desperate trick, but the only one he could think of that increased his chances. Most horses shied from the smell of fresh blood. He needed the horse for a breastworks, anyway, and could have shot him, but he had saved a bullet, and the blood smell might work for him. As soon as he was sure the horse was beyond rising, he picked up his rifle. The Indians were shooting, though still far out of effective range. He again heard a zing of bullets cutting the prairie grass. Augustus rested the rifle barrel across the dying horse's withers and waited. The Indians were yelling as they raced down on him. One or two carried lances, but those were mainly for show, or to puncture him with if they caught him alive. Sure enough, when they were 50 or 60 yards away, their horses caught the first whiffs of fresh blood, still pumping from the torn throat of the dying horse. They slowed and began to rear and shy, and as they did, Augustus started shooting. The Indians were dismayed. They flailed at the horses with their rifles, but the horses were spooked. Two stopped dead, and Augustus immediately shot their riders. He could have asked for no better target than an Indian stopped 50 yards away on a horse that wouldn't move. The two men dropped and lay still. Augustus replaced 2 cartridges and wiped the sweat out of his eyes. The blood had bought him a chance. Without it, he would have been overrun and killed, no matter how fast or well he had shot. Now the Indians were trying to force their horses into a charge, but it wasn't working. The horses kept swerving and shying. Some tried to circle to the south, and when they turned, Augustus shot 2 more. Then one Indian did a gallant thing. He threw a blanket over his horse's head and got the confused horse to charge blind. The man seemed to be the leader, or at least he carried the longest lance. He charged the wallow, rifle in one hand and lance in the other. Though when he tried to lever the rifle with one hand, he dropped it. Augustus almost laughed, but the Indian kept up the charge with only a lance. A brave thing. Augustus shot him when he was no more than 30 feet away. He let him get that close in hopes of grabbing his horse. The Indian fell dead, but the horse shied away, and Augustus didn't feel he could afford to chase him. The remaining Indians were discouraged. 5 Indians were dead, and the battle not 5 minutes old. Augustus replaced his cartridges and killed a 6th as the Indians were retreating. He might have gotten 1 or 2 more, but decided against risking long shots when his situation was so chancy. There might be more Indians available nearby, though he considered it unlikely. Probably they had charged with all they had, in which case he had killed 1/2 of them. With no shooting to do for a little while, Augustus took stock of the situation and decided the worst part of it was that he had no one to talk to. He had been within 1 or 2 minutes of death, which could not be said to be boring exactly, but even desperate battle was lacking in something if there was no one to discuss it with. What had made battle interesting over the years was not his opponents, but his colleagues. It was fascinating, at least to him, to see how the men he had fought with most often reacted to the stimulus of attack. P.I., for example, was mostly concerned with not running out of bullets. He was extremely conservative in his choice of targets, so conservative that he often spent the whole engagement sighting at people but never pulling the trigger. "Could have wasted a shell," he said, if someone pointed this out to him. It was true that when he did shoot, he rarely missed, but that was because he rarely shot anything over 30 yards away. Call was interesting to observe in a battle, too. It took a fight to bring out the fighter in him, and a fighter was mostly what he was. Call was a great attacker. Once the enemy was sighted, he liked to go after them, and would often do so in defiance of the odds. He might plan elaborately before a battle, but once it was joined, his one desire was to close with the enemy and destroy him. Carl had destruction in him, and would go on killing when there was no need. Once his blood heated, it was slow to cool. Carl himself had never been beaten for good. Only death could accomplish that. And he reasoned that if an enemy was alive, he wasn't beaten either, not for good. Augustus knew that reasoning wasn't accurate. Men could get enough of fighting and turn from it. Some would do almost anything to avoid the fear it produced. Dietz understood that. He would never fire on a fleeing man, whereas Call would pursue a man 50 miles and kill him if the man had attacked him. Dietz fought carefully and shrewdly. He would have known the trick about fresh blood, but Dietz's great ability was in preventing ambushes. He would seem to feel them coming, often 1 or 2 early, when he could have had no particular clues. "How'd you know?" they would ask him, and Dietz would have no answer. "Just knew," he said. The 6 remaining Indians had retreated well beyond rifle range, but they weren't gone. He could see them holding council, but they were 300 yards away, and the heat waves created a wavery mirage between him and them. Unless there were more Indians, Augustus didn't consider that he was in a particularly serious situation. It was hot, and the blowflies were already buzzing over the horse blood, but those were trivial discomforts. He had filled his canteen that morning. and the Canadian was no more than 10 miles to the north. More than likely, the Indians would decide that they had missed their big chance and go away. They might try to get him at night, but he didn't plan to be there. Come dark, he would head for the river. All afternoon, the 6 Indians stayed where they were. Occasionally, they would fire a shot his way, hoping to get lucky. Finally, one rode off to the east, returning about an hour later with a white man who set up a tripod and began to shoot at him with a 50-caliber buffalo gun. That was an inconvenient development. Augustus had to hastily dig himself a shallow hole on the other side of the horse, where the blood and the blowflies were worse. They were not worse, though, than the impact of a 50-caliber bullet, several of which hit the horse in the next hour. Augustus kept digging. Fortunately, the man was not a particularly good shot. Many of the bullets sang overhead, though one or two hit his saddle and ricocheted. Once, when the buffalo hunter was reloading, Gus took a quick shot at him, raising his barrel to compensate for the range. The shot missed the white man, but wounded one of the Indian horses. The horse's scream unnerved the shooter, who moved his tripod back another 50 yards. Augustus kept low and waited for darkness, which was only another hour away. The shooter kept him pinned until full dark, but as soon as it was too dark to shoot, Augustus yanked his saddle loose from the dead mount and walked west, stopping to take what bullets he could salvage from the men he had killed. None had many, but one had a fairly good rifle, and Augustus took it as insurance. He hated carrying the saddle, but it was a shield of sorts. If he got caught in open country, it might be the only cover he would have. While he was going from corpse to corpse, collecting ammunition, he was startled to hear the sudden rattle of shots from the east. That was puzzling. Either the Indians had fallen to fighting among themselves, or someone else had come on the scene. Then the shots ceased, and he heard the sound of running horses, the Indians leaving, most probably. This new development put him in a quandary. He was prepared for a good hard walk to the river, carrying a heavy saddle. But if there were strangers around, they might be friendly, and he might not have to carry the saddle. Possibly the scout for a cattle herd had stumbled into the little group of hostiles, though the main trail routes lay to the east. At any rate, he didn't feel that he should ignore the possibility, so he turned back toward the shooting. There was still a little light in the sky, though it was dark on the ground. From time to time, Augustus stopped to listen, and at first heard nothing. The plains were still. The third time he stopped, he thought he heard voices. They were faint, but they were white, an encouraging sign. He went cautiously toward them, trying to make as little noise as possible. It was hard to carry a saddle without it creaking some, but he was afraid to put it down for fear he could not find his way back to it in the dark. Then he heard a horse snort, another horse jingle its bit. He was getting close. He stopped to wait for the moon to rise. When it did, he moved a little closer, hoping to see something. Instead, he heard what sounded like a subdued argument. "We don't know how many there is," one voice said. "There could be 500 Indians around here for all we know." "I can go find them," another voice said. It was a girlish voice, which surprised him. "You hush," the first voice said. "Just because you can catch varmints don't mean you can sneak up on Indians." "I could find them," the girlish voice insisted. "They'll find you and make soup out of you if you ain't lucky," was the reply. "I don't think there's no 500," a third voice said. "I don't think there's 500 Indians left in this part of the country." "Well, if there was even 100, we'd have all we could do," the first voice pointed out. "I'd like to know who they were shooting at when we rode up," the other man said. "I don't believe it was buffalo, though I know it was a buffalo gun." Augustus decided he wouldn't get a better opportunity than that, so he cleared his throat and spoke in the loudest tones he could muster without actually shouting. "They were shooting at me," he said. "I'm Captain McCrae, and I'm coming in." He took a few steps to the side when he said it, for he had known men to shoot from reflex when they were frightened. Nothing was more dangerous than walking into a camp of a bunch of men who had their nerves on edge. "Don't get nervous and shoot. I'm friendly," he said. just as he saw the outline of their horses against the sky.
"I hate this walking around in the dark," he added loudly. Not that it was much of an observation. It was designed to keep the strangers from getting jumpy.
Then he saw four people standing by the horses. It was too dark to tell much about any of them, but he dumped the saddle on the ground and went over to shake hands.
"Howdy," he said.
And the men shook hands, though none of them had yet said anything. The surprise of his appearance had evidently left them speechless.
"Well, here we are," Augustus said. "I'm Augustus McCrae, and I'm after an outlaw named Blue Duck. Have you seen any sign of the man?"
"No, we just got here," one of the men said. "I know about him, though," July said. "My name is July Johnson. I'm sheriff of Fort Smith, Arkansas. This is my deputy, Roscoe Brown."
"July Johnson?" Augustus asked.
"Yes," July said.
"By God, that's a good one," Augustus said. "We were expecting you down in Lonesome Dove, and here you are practically in Kansas. If you're still after Jake Spoon, you've missed him by about 300 miles.
"I have more urgent business," July said rather solemnly. To Augustus, he seemed young, although it was hard to tell in the dark. Mainly, it was his voice that seemed young.
"I see you brought your family," Augustus said. "Most lawmen don't travel with the children. Or did you pick up these two sprats along the way?"
Nobody answered. They simply stood, as if the question was too complicated for an answer. "Did the Indians kill your horse?" July asked.
"No, I killed him," Augustus said. "Used him for a fort. There ain't much to hide behind on these plains. I heard shooting. Did you kill any more of them bucks?"
"Don't think so," July said. "I might have hit the buffalo hunter. We never expected to find Indians."
"I killed 6 this afternoon," Augustus said. "I think there was 12 to begin with, not counting the buffalo hunter. I expect they work for Blue Duck. He stole a woman, and I'm after him. I think he sent them bucks to slow me down."
"I hope there ain't too much of a bunch," Roscoe said. "I ain't never killed one before." In fact, he had never killed anyone before, or even given the possibility much thought. Sudden death was not unknown in Fort Smith, but it was not common either. It had been a big shock when the Indians turned their guns on them and began to shoot at them. Not until he saw July draw his rifle and start firing did it dawn on him that they were under attack. He had hastily drawn his pistol and shot several times. It had not affected the Indians, but it angered July. "You're just wasting bullets. They're way out of pistol range," he said. But then the Indians ran, so it didn't matter so much.
"What's your plan, Mr. Johnson?" Augustus asked politely. "If your business is urgent, you might not want to slow down long enough to help me catch this Blue Duck."
That was true. July didn't want to slow down at all until he found Elmira. If he had been alone, he would have traveled 20 hours a day and rested 4. But he was hardly alone. Roscoe was nervous as a cat and spent all day talking about his worries. Joe didn't complain, but the hard traveling had worn him out, and he rode along in a doze most of the time and slept like a dead thing when they stopped. The only one who didn't suffer from the pace was Janie, who mainly walked. July had to admit that she was unusually helpful. When they stopped, she did whatever chores there were to do without being asked. And she was always up and ready to leave when he was, whereas Joe and Roscoe were so sluggish in the morning that it took them half an hour just to get their horses saddled. Now, out of the blue, a Texas Ranger had showed up, one of the very ones who had partnered with Jake Spoon. He was afoot and a long way from help, and they couldn't just ride off and leave him. Besides, there were hostile Indians around, which made the whole situation more worrisome.
"I haven't planned very much," July said honestly. "Seems like every time I make a plan, something happens to change it."
"Well, life's a twisting stream," Augustus said. "Speaking of which, the Canadian River ain't but a short way to the north. Them bucks are probably camped somewhere on it."
"What would you advise?" July asked. "You know the country."
It's a steep bank river, Augusta said. If we have to fight Indians, we'd be in a lot better position there than out on this plain.
You say the man stole a woman? July asked.
Yes, Augusta said. Girl who was traveling with us.
We best go on to the river, I guess, July said. You can ride with me and Roscoe can tote your saddle.
If this boy ain't armed, maybe he'd like a rifle, Augusta said. One of them bucks I shot had a pretty good Winchester. This boy looks old enough to shoot.
He handed the rifle to Joe, who was so stunned by the gift that he could barely say thank you. Is it loaded already? He asked, rubbing the smooth stock with one hand.
You're darn right it's loaded, Augusta said. Just make sure you shoot one of them and not one of us.
He climbed up behind July, and they all rode north. Joe felt intensely proud now that he was armed. He kept one hand on the stock of the rifle, expecting that any minute the Indians might attack. But the ride to the river was uneventful. It seemed they had not been riding long before they saw the silver band of the river in the moonlight. July stopped so abruptly that Joe almost bumped into his horse. He and Mr. McCrae were looking at something downriver. At first, Joe couldn't see anything to look at, but then he noticed a tiny flame of light far downriver.
That'd be them, Augusta said. I guess they ain't worried about us, or they wouldn't be so bold with their campfire. They don't know it, but the wrath of the Lord is about to descend upon them. I dislike bold criminals of whatever race, and I believe I'll go see that they pay their debts.
I'd best go with you, July said. You don't know how many there are.
Let's go make camp, Augusta said. Then we'll think it out.
They rode upriver a mile, stopping where the mouth of the canyon sloped down to the riverbed.
This is as good as we'll get, Augusta said. What I'd like is the loan of a horse for the night. I'll have him back by breakfast. Maybe a few others to boot.
You want to go with them alone? July asked.
It's my job, Augusta said. I doubt there's many of them. I just hope Blue Duck is there.
Roscoe could not believe what he was hearing. He felt very scared as it was, and yet the stranger was prepared to ride off by himself.
While there could be 10 of them, you think you could kill 10 men? They're easy to scare at night, Augusta said. I expect I'll just run most of them off, but I do intend to kill Mr. Duck if I see him. He stole his last woman.
I think I ought to go, July said. I could be of some help. Roscoe can stay here with the young ones.
No, I'd rather you stay with your party, Mr. Johnson, Augusta said. I'd feel better about it in my mind. You've got an experienced deputy and 2 young people to think about. Besides, you said you had urgent business. These things are chancy. You might stop a bullet and never get your business finished.
I think I ought to go, July said. It was in his mind that Ellie could even be in the camp. Somebody could have stolen her as easily as the Texas woman. The whiskey traders wouldn't have put up much fight. Of course, it wasn't likely she was there, but then what was likely anymore? He felt he ought to have a look, at least. In any case, the man could use help, and it should be no great risk to leave Roscoe and the young ones in camp for a few hours. They all needed the rest. Augustus realized he could probably use help, since he didn't know how many men he was facing. However, he didn't have a high opinion of the average man's ability as a fighter. The majority of men couldn't fight at all, and even most outlaws were the merest amateurs when it came to battle. Few could shoot well, and even fewer had any mind for strategy. The problem was that Blue Duck was evidently one of the few who could think. He had planned the theft of Lorena perfectly. Also, he had survived 20 years or more in a rough country at a rough game, and he could be expected to be formidable if he was around. But he probably wasn't there. Probably he had sold the woman and left, sending a few Kiowas down the trail to take care of whoever came along. It would likely be just a matter of shooting down 2 or 3 renegade buffalo hunters who had been too lazy to find honest work once the herds petered out. Augustus was undecided as whether he would be better off by himself or with a country sheriff from Arkansas. All he knew about the sheriff was that Jake Spoon had run from him, which wasn't much to go on.
The young man had had no experience with plains fighting, and perhaps not much with any fighting. There was no telling if he could even take care of himself in a scrape. If he couldn't, he would be better left. But then, who would know until the fighting started?
"What happens to us if you two both get killed?" Roscoe asked.
It was a question that loomed large in his mind.
"Head back southeast as fast as you can," Augusta said. "Once you make it down below the Red River, you'll probably be all right. If you go east a ways, you ought to run into some herds."
"Why, we'll be back," July said. "I ought to go help Captain McCrae, but we'll be back." Augustus didn't feel right about it, but he made no further effort to stop July Johnson. They let the horses rest for an hour and then put Augustus's saddle on Roscoe's big gelding and left. When they rode up on the ridge above the river, they saw again the little spark of light to the east and made for it.
"If this isn't prying, what is this urgent business you're on?" Augustus asked.
July was hesitant about answering. Roscoe and Joe had both looked at him strangely as he left, and the look bothered him. It was as if both of them were his children. Both looked to him for care. Only Janie seemed comfortable being left on the Canadian.
"Well, sir, it's my wife," July said. "She's gone from home. It might be that she got stolen, too."
Augustus felt that was interesting. They were both chasing women across the plains. He said no more. A man whose wife had left was apt to be sore about it and touchy. He changed the subject at once.
"It was your brother that Jake shot?"
he asked. "Yes," July said. "I guess it was accidental, but I've got to take him back. Only I'd like to find Elmira first." They rode in silence for 7 or 8 miles over broken country. Augustus was thinking what a curious man Jake Spoon was, that he would let a woman be stolen and just go on playing cards or whatever he was doing. Every time they topped a ridge and saw the tiny flame of the campfire, July tried to calm himself, tried to remind himself that it would be almost a miracle if Elmira were there. Yet he couldn't help hoping. Sometimes he felt so bad about things that he didn't know if he could keep going much longer without knowing where she was. Finally, with a camp not more than a mile away, Augustus drew rein. He dismounted to listen. In the still night, on the open plain, voices could carry a ways, and he might be able to get a sense of how many they were up against. July dismounted, too, and waited for Augustus to tell him what the plan was. They were only 100 yards from the river, and while they were listening, they heard something splash through the water downstream from where they stood.
"It could be a buffalo," July whispered. "We've seen a few."
"More likely a horse," Augustus said. "Buffalo won't cross that close to camp."
He looked at the young man, worried by the nervousness in his voice.
"Have you done much of this kind of thing, Mr. Johnson?"
he asked.
"No," July admitted. "I ain't done none. About the worst we get in Arkansas are robbers."
"Let's walk our horses a little closer," Augustus said. "Don't let 'em whinny. If we can get within 100 yards of their camp, we'll be in good shape. Then I favor charging right into 'em. They'll hear us before they see us, which will scare 'em, and we'll be on 'em before they can have time to think. Use your handgun and save your rifle. This'll be close-range work. If there's any left, we'll turn and make a second run at 'em."
"We mustn't trample a woman," July said.
"We won't," Augustus said. "Have you ever killed?"
"No," July said. "Never had to." "I wish you'd stayed with your party," Augustus thought, but he didn't say it.
Chapter 57
Dogface was dying, and he knew it. A bullet had hit a rib and turned downward into his gut. The bullet hadn't come out, and nobody was trying to get it out either. He lay on a saddle blanket in his death sweat, and all Blue Duck wanted to know was how many men there had been in the party that shot him. 3 horses, one of the Kiowas said, but Dogface couldn't remember if it had been 2 or 3. It was getting dark, he said. One whole side of his body was wet with blood. He wanted to see the girl, but Blue Duck squatted by his side, blocking his view. "You never hit McCrae?" he asked.
"He forded up behind his horse," Dogface said. "I might have put one in him. I don't know."
"We'll kill him tomorrow," Monkey John said. "He ain't got no horse. Maybe he's crippled."
"I doubt it," Blue Duck said. "I expect tomorrow he'll walk in and finish the rest of you unless he does it tonight."
"I hurt bad," Dogface said. "Go on and shoot me."
Blue Duck laughed. "You won't catch me wasting a bullet on you," he said. "Monkey can cut your damn throat if he wants to." But Monkey wouldn't come near him. Monkey John was worried, and so were the Kiowas. They all kept cocking and uncocking their pistols. They asked for whiskey, but Blue Duck wouldn't give them any. Dogface looked at the girl. She sat with her arms wrapped around her knees. Blue Duck went and saddled his horse, and when he came back to the fire, he kicked the girl. He kicked her several times until she fell over and lay curled up.
"What'd she do?" Dogface asked.
Blue Duck walked over and kicked him in the side, causing him to scream with pain and roll off the blanket.
"Mind your own goddamn business," Blue Duck said. "You gonna leave?" Monkey John asked nervously.
"That's right," Blue Duck said. "I aim to look for a better crew. The whole bunch of you couldn't kill one man. You never even attacked that second bunch. It was probably just a cowboy or two."
Dogface tried to roll back on his blanket, but his strength was gone. The Kiowas had already taken his gun and divided his ammunition among themselves, so he couldn't even shoot himself. He had a razor in his pack and might have managed to cut his own throat, but his pack was on the other side of the fire, and he knew he would never be able to crawl to it.
Blue Duck kicked Lorena twice more. "You ain't worth selling," Blue Duck said. "The Kiowas can have you."
"What about me?" Monkey John asked. "What about my half-interest?"
"I won back your half-interest," Blue Duck said.
"I won the Kiowas' half, too." "Then how come you're giving her to the goddamn Kiowas?" Monkey John said. "Give her to me."
"No. I want them to carve her up," Blue Duck said. "It might put some spirit in them, so they can go out tomorrow and run that old ranger to ground."
"Hell, I'm as mean as they are," Monkey John said. "I can finish him if he comes around here."
Blue Duck mounted. "You ain't half as mean as they are," he said. "And if McCrae comes around here, you better step quick or you'll be plugged. He got Irmoki, and Irmoki was 3 times the fighter you are."
He opened his pack, took out a bottle of whiskey, and pitched it to the Indians. Then he said something to them in their language and rode away toward the river. Lorena lay where she had fallen, listening to Dogface moan. With each breath, he let out a throaty moan. His wound had bloody bubbles on it. Lorena got up on her hands, knees, and vomited from fear. The Kiowas were all looking at her as they drank. She wanted to run, but felt too weak. Anyway, they would soon catch her if she ran. She crawled away from the vomit and sank back, too tired and scared to move. Monkey John sat back from the fire, clutching his rifle. He didn't even look at her. He wouldn't help her. She was just in for it.
"Help her, Monkey," Dogface said weakly.
"Hell, I can't help her," Monkey John said. "You heard him. He gave her to him."
One of the Kiowas understood the talk and was angered. He pulled his knife and stood over Dogface threateningly. Dogface continued to moan. Then the Kiowa sat on his chest, and Dogface screamed, a weak scream. The rest of the Indians jumped for him. He was too weak to even lift a hand. One Kiowa cut his belt, and 2 more pulled his pants off. Before Lorena could even turn her head, they castrated him. Another slashed a knife across his forehead and began to rip off his hair. Dogface screamed again, but it was soon muffled as the Kiowas held his head and stuffed his own bloody organs into his mouth, shoving them down his throat with the handle of a knife. His hair was soon ripped off, and the Kiowa took the scalp and tied it to his lance. Dogface struggled for breath, a pool of blood beneath his legs. Yet he wasn't dead. Lorena had her face in her arms, but she could still hear him moan and gurgle for breath. She wished he would die. It shouldn't take so long just to die.
She expected any minute that they would fall on her, but they didn't. What they had done to Dogface put them in a good mood, and they passed around the whiskey bottle. Monkey John was probably as scared as she was. He sat silently by the fire, his rifle in his hands, pulling at his dirty beard. Once in a while, the Kiowas would jabber at him in their own language, but he didn't answer. Lying with her face almost on the ground, she was the first to hear the horses, only she didn't really know what it was, or take any hope from it. It was something running. Maybe Blue Duck was coming back to reclaim her. The Kiowas, singing and drinking, with two bloody knives still in their hands, didn't hear the running, but Monkey John suddenly heard it. He jumped to his feet and raised his rifle, but before he could fire, she heard a gun go off in the darkness, and Monkey John dropped his rifle and slumped to a sitting position, his mouth open as if he were about to say something. Lorena saw that, and just as she saw it, the two horses raced right over Monkey John without touching him, and were into the Kiowas. One Kiowa screamed, a sound more hopeless and frightening even than the scream of Dogface. Before she thought about it being Gus, she saw him yank his horse almost down right in the middle of the Kiowas. He shot the one that screamed, and then the two that held the knives, shooting from his horse right into their chests. Another Kiowa grabbed the lance with Dogface's scalp on it, but Gus shot him before he could lift it. He shot another just as the man was picking up his rifle. The last Kiowa fled into the darkness, and Gus turned his horse after him. "Finish any that ain't finished," he said to the other man. But that man had barely dismounted before there was a shot in the darkness. He stood by his horse, listening. There was another shot, and then the sound of a horse loping back. Lorena thought it was over, but Monkey John shot with his pistol at the man standing by the fire. He missed completely, and the man slowly raised his own pistol. But before he could fire, Gus rode back into the firelight and shot with his rifle, knocking Monkey John back into the pack. Then Gus turned her over and was holding her in his arms, rifle still in one hand.
"Where's Blue Duck, Lori?" he asked. "Was he here tonight?"
Lorena had a hard struggle to get her mind back to Blue Duck. She had stopped talking, and though she wanted to talk, the words wouldn't come. She stared at Gus and began to cry, but she couldn't get out an answer to the question.
"Was he here tonight?" Gus asked again. "Just answer that, and I won't bother you no more until you feel better."
Lorena nodded. Blue Duck had been there. It was all she could do. Gus stood up.
"Go back to your party," Gus said to the other man. "Go now."
"I didn't shoot a one," the other man said. "You shot the whole bunch."
"It ain't important. I can't leave this girl, and she ain't in shape to travel fast. Go back to your party. If Laura can ride, we'll come when we can."
"Did you kill the one that ran off?" July asked.
"Yes," Augusta said. "A man can't outrun a horse. You get along. There's a dangerous man loose along this river, and I doubt that deputy of yours can handle him."
"What if I can't either?" July thought, looking down at Dogface. He had managed to pull his genitals out of his mouth and still lay breathing. Looking at the pool of blood he lay in, July felt his stomach start to come up. He turned away to keep from vomiting.
"I'll tidy up these dead," Augusta said. "I know this is a shock to you, Mr. Johnson. It's different from a barroom scrape in Arkansas, but you got to choke it down and get back to your people."
"Are you going to kill him?" July asked, referring to Dogface.
"Yes, if he don't travel soon," Augusta said.
Before July was over the second ridge, he heard the gun again.
Chapter 58.
"Reckon we'll hear it when they fight?" Joe asked.
"We won't hear it much," Roscoe said. "That campfire was way off, and anyway, maybe it's just cowboys, and there won't be no fight."
"But we saw Indians," Joe said.
"I bet it's them."
"It might be them," Roscoe admitted. "But maybe they just kept running."
"I hope they didn't run this direction," Joe said. He hated to admit how scared he was, but he was a good deal more scared than he could remember being before in his life. Usually when they camped, he was so glad to be stopped that he just unrolled his blanket and went to sleep. But though he unrolled his blanket as usual, he didn't go to sleep. It was the first time he had been separated from July on the whole trip, and he was surprised at how much scarier it felt. They had been forbidden to build a fire, so all they could do was sit in the dark. Of course it was.